My name is Martin Suberg. I'm the commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. We have other Mass DEP people from our headquarters drinking water program, as well as the regional offices on the line. I will ask some of them to identify themselves later in the call, just so that we can keep the discussion going. As Jennifer and I alluded to, this is being recorded so that we can post it later for people that weren't able to join the call. And, we will make that available, I think, through a web link. So let me start by saying thank you for being on this call. We plan to make communication with you a regular weekly form of communication. In the meantime, MassDEP, even though we are working remotely right now, will be available to you regularly to develop solutions to issues that we will be talking about today in light of the coronavirus. You can always contact me at my email. And at the end of the call, I'm going to ask regional staff from each regional office to identify themselves as immediate points of contact with both phone numbers and email addresses, excuse me, to keep the flow of communication going. That's not a flu cough, by the way. We are all in this together. We recognize and have always recognized the essential role public water suppliers have played in providing life's basic necessity in a safe and responsible manner. COVID-19 is raising challenges, and we want to work with you to overcome them. Our role at DEP as regulators is to help do this. At this time, enforcement is not a priority. Helping you to do your jobs is. I'll say that again. Enforcement is not a priority. Helping you to do your jobs is. We want to work with you reasonably, be thoughtful together, and be collaborative. We will need to be involved with you to make sure that the water delivers continues to be safe, but we recognize that we will need to be flexible in responding to this crisis. Thank you for the steps that you are already taking and the extraordinary preparations I know that are already underway. In the meantime, we have received some questions already, which we will do our best to answer now. Those we can't answer, either that we've received or will receive on this call, we commit to getting back to you rapidly. We're working closely with EPA to make sure that federal guidance is consistent with the things that we'll be developing in Massachusetts. And we're regularly briefing our governor's office on our work in case additional help, additional resources need to be brought to bear to addressing problems. I would note that on the mass.gov COVID-19 page, there is a link. It is a preliminary set of resources that the drinking water program has identified. It went live today. We'll circulate that email link. We plan to update it regularly as we receive inquiries and start publishing guidance that would be helpful to water suppliers as they are approaching this unprecedented situation. So with that, I wanted to start going into questions that we've already received at various points. I may ask, and if the technology works, Jen, I might ask you to unmute some of the folks from the drinking water program to supplement our answers. But I'll take on the questions. I'll start with the questions I know about now, and we'll start from there. So a big initial round of questions relates to sampling, coliform sampling. And we've heard from a number of communities. And, the questions, fall into a number of categories. First of all, people ask, are there any special procedures, best practices to utilize when going into either a private residence or a commercial enterprise or a building? At this point, We have not received any particular guidance from the Department of Public Health or other health authorities about any special precautions to be taken. We're all aware of the guidance that people are, you know, have already shared about, you know, regular hand washing, avoiding, you know, avoiding contact. But we have not received any, particular guidance, but we have asked DPH. And we are engaging with them, and we hope in the near future to share with you any additional guidance with respect to whether or not entering a home or entering a particular type of structure where you might have to do sampling requires either precautions or whether there are other things that people should be thinking about. And we will share that as expeditiously as possible. In the meantime, people are pointing out that there are residences residences where, you know, either people might be sick or there's an elderly population, you know, situations where maybe the occupant doesn't want the person doing the sampling to come in, or, you know, this, you know, you're uncertain about whether or not it's appropriate to go in. You know, we urge you at this point to err on the side of caution. Again, we'll try to get you guidance as quickly as possible. But for those of you asking, if you're unable to get in because either, you know, the occupant doesn't want you in, or now a building or a business is closed as a result of the orders that have been put in place, we are eager to work with you to make sure that, you know, viable alternatives are in place. Some of you have already used upstream and downstream locations, and we believe that's appropriate. You know, some of you have used that, and again, we, you know, all we ask at DEP is that you let us know that you've done that. Some of you have indicated that it may be difficult to use even those upstream and downstream locations. In that case, I would encourage system operators to be in contact with our regional offices to talk about what the alternatives are. We're going to try to make sure that you know, we are working with you. It's important to do bacteria sampling, obviously. We want to make sure that we're looking at public health from that standpoint. But again, if you are confronting situations where you cannot get into buildings and you want to look either at alternative sites or alternative ways of making sure that you're getting the sampling completed, that is something we want to engage with you on. Again, a number of systems have indicated they're worried about if they do this, you know, would they be subject of notices of non-compliance? Again, that is not our priority right now. Our priority is to make sure that you do the best job you can with sampling, and that you know, we're in the loop with you so that we can help you on this. You know, and when in doubt, I encourage you to reach out. Like I said, towards the end of my part of this call, I'm going to ask each of the regional staff to identify their names and points of contact. There has been a question. Also, we've gotten some questions about cross-connection inspections, lead and sampling, whether or not, you know, some of them are scheduled to go. If systems opted to delay doing that right now and maybe pushing it later into the year when we have a better sense of how we're doing, you know, potentially, you know, taking that kind of strategy, I think the drinking water system is encouraging systems to do that. And we can talk about other sampling issues as well as we move forward. But again, we recognize that you're going to be confronting situations where you may not be able to get into your usual sampling places, or you may not feel comfortable getting in. And we want to make sure that we're working with you on that. Another big set of questions is staffing and licensing. We are aware that a number of your systems are doing a lot of really good thinking in advance about how to deal with this situation. You've asked questions and staffing shortages You know, what can we do to cover if we're losing manpower as a result of the virus? You know, we cover some of this in our regulations and the work we do with you in emergency response planning. But of course, we recognize this is an unprecedented event. And so we want to make sure that we're working with you. Some of you have asked about, you know, how much can you do if you have a SCADA system? Are there things you can do and, you know, limit the amount of manpower in a particular facility and do more with SCADA? Again, we'd like to work with you on, you know, as regional, you know, contact the regional office and tell us what you have in mind. Others of you are thinking ahead that if you are losing operators, you know, can you bring other operators on board? We're working with, and I believe we have Mike Maynard, who's the chair of the board of licensure for the drinking water operators, to, you know, make sure that we're being as supportive as possible on this. We're trying to identify the list of recently retired drinking water operators that, you know, that might be helpful. We're also, we've also talked to, talked about, you know, licenses that have recently expired, making it easier for somebody who's let their license go inactive to, you know, come back to active status in this. And then the, you know, the emergency provisions, you know, that are in the licensing regs where you're able to say that you're identifying people that, you know, don't typically meet the profile of a licensed operator, but, you know, you've been working on thinking about how these people might be able to fulfill the function. I might ask, you know, when I'm done with, you know, maybe when, as we go into the Q&A part, I might ask Mike Maynard to say more about that. Another issue we've heard about is chemicals. You know, I understand at least from one entity that there may be a backlog on sodium hydroxide. I'd ask if there are other chemicals. We've started talking to EPA about that. It would be very helpful for us to have, you know, regular ongoing information if you find out that, you know, chemicals that you need to run your system are hard to come by. You know, again, we are in contact with emergency management authorities, and we would work to do our best to make sure that we are helping you with that. So we really want to make sure that we're keeping a close watch on that. So with that, that's the original. You know, that's. Those are some of the big issues. I know there's questions. We got a question from procurement. You know, if people are losing capacity and they don't have time to go through a bidding process to hire contractors, you know, can we use the state of emergency powers that the governor declared to waive some of that? We're going to look into that. You know, there's a question about testing, you know, reporting deadlines for certain reports like ASRs and CCRs. We don't have an answer on that yet, but again, we're aware of the questions and we will work on those as well. So with that, I might ask if it is possible, Jen, if you could maybe unmute Kathy Baskin, Yvette DePisa, Mike Maynard, and Damon Gutterman, if he's on the call, to see, you know, in terms of if I've missed anything on the coliform testing part. And then I'd like to get Mike to talk a little bit, you know, if I've missed anything on the manpower issues.
We have 252 people on the call. Can those folks that commissioners just identified unmute yourselves by hitting, I believe it's star 6.
Didn't
Kathy?
Work, Mike.
No. All right, I'm going to unmute everyone. Please don't all speak at once. Okay, Kathy,
This may not work. We're getting a lot of feedback from the number of people we have. Let's go back on mute. And I might ask those people from DEP. I might ask the people from DEP to you know, email me with particular things they'd like to see me further identify in our comments. Jen, are you still there? Hello? Jen, are you there? Hello? Hi, I'm not sure if anybody can hear me right now.
Mr. Suberg, do you hear me?
I do hear you.
Okay, star six works.
Okay, we can hear you, Marty, so I'm going to mute everybody, and only those people that the commissioner identifies hit star six.
Okay, very good.
Okay, Commissioner, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, so now
okay, good.
I do see several people have unmuted themselves. I'm assuming those are the staff that you've identified.
Right. So let's start with the sampling. Again, you know, I really wanted to convey that, you know, we're getting guidance from DPH about whether there are any special precautions, particularly if you're entering a residential dwelling. But we're also recognizing that, you know, systems will be confronting, you know, situations where either the facility is closed or the person or entities in the facility don't want to let the person doing the sampling in. And so we've talked about using upstream and downstream, but we also recognize from some of the questions we're receiving that even that is a challenge. And so we want to work with you. And the first thing would be that you make contact with the regional offices, you know, and we'll have a point of contact at the end. And I might ask them, so because of the muting situation, if each of the people that want to be a point of contact could email me on my state account right now so that at the end of the call we can share that with everybody, both your email and your phone number, that would be great. But you know, first and foremost, let's talk about sampling and you know, again, we're mindful of it. We're hoping to get DPH additional guidance, and we're also we also want to work with you if you're confronting an impossible situation. Anything to add, either Kathy, Yvette, or Damon?
This is Damon. No, I think you covered most of the things that we would cover. You know, I think that the messaging we're trying to get out there is, you know, do your best to get your full complement of sample.
I'm not sure.
I thought we were muted.
Folks, I think some people have unmuted themselves who shouldn't be. Can you please all make sure you're muted except for the state staff? Damon, are you still?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Marty covered most of our basic points. We understand that a lot of your locations are not going to be accessible, either because the residents don't want you there or official policy keeps you out or your own staff are concerned about going in. And, you know, especially when it comes to bacteria sampling, what we're being told and what we're asking you to do is to do your best to get all the number of samples you're required to collect in the period you're required to collect them. EPA was pretty firm on that when we talked with them this morning. And, you know, we believe it's an essential part of your activities to ensure the water is still safe to drink.
So do your best to get them, but there is a recognition that it may be that we won't get the full amount, and we will do our best on that, right? Is that what EPA was telling you? I should point out there was apparently an EPA call with all of the state drinking water programs this morning. That's what Damon is referring to.
Yeah. You know, they're saying that, you know, they understand that it'll be tricky in some cases, but that is the goal, is to get all your samples. And you know, we're open to conversations about, you know, if the school is closed, going somewhere else, if a nursing home will let you in, going next door, going wherever you can go to get the number of samples in that neighborhood, let's say.
Hello?
Okay, so now I might ask Mike Maynard to, and again, when we were talking about, before I get to Mike, one other thing we talked about was, you know, people have asked, can they take more time without risk of enforcement to do, you know, their cross connection? In other words, if you're scheduled to do it this month, can you push it out? And we think that's prudent. So, you know, again, stay in touch with your regional offices. But you know, again, we're recognizing that this is an unprecedented situation. So now I might ask Mike Maynard to talk a little bit about licensing. Okay, Mike hasn't.
Mike should be unmuted.
Okay. Well, you know, if he's not able to get himself on the line, then you know, as I tried to indicate, you know, there are provisions to grant.
This is Michael Maynard. Can you hear me?
Now we can. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, Commissioner, I think you covered pretty much everything as it relates to staffing, and I know there were some more questions from Mass Waterworks that were more complex. So I think we drafted responses to those. We sent them to Kathy Baskin, and I think the intent is to post those or to distribute them to the associations. But some of the points that did come up is that DPL, Division of Professional Licensing, is the licensing authority. So they have the ultimate responsibility for approving licenses. We are in close contact with them to overcome any obstacles for licenses. We have provisions currently within the regs with DPL and our board for temporary emergency certification. And we think that's gonna be a viable solution for systems that need to identify an individual who's, you know, may have just retired, license may have just recently expired, or other individuals to approach Division of Professional Licensing to see if they can, you know, use that as a temporary measure for operator certification. Those are some details that we're working out with DPL. We're also identifying, based on some input from Mass Waterworks, is identifying operators whose licenses have recently expired at 12/31/19. We're developing that list. We will reach out to contact them to see if they can you know, renew their license. We'll also distribute it to New England Waterworks, Mass Waterworks, and the other associations. And there is currently proposed legislation so that all those individuals whose licenses recently expired can actually jump back on if that emergency declaration happens. I know Kathy and Yvette and the commissioner were working on that. So that's about it. There are more details in the Q&As that we eventually will post. And that's it. That's it for me.
And Mike, if somebody had a question right now about saying, you know, I want to get somebody, you know, temporarily certified, can they email you? And would you be willing to share your email address?
Yeah, sure. They can send it to, I think in our Q&As. We said send it to, it would be an application for temporary emergency certification, which is available on the DPL website. Or if a question, they can send it to drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov. And then also include me, michael.maynard@mass.gov. So that would be a temporary emergency certification application to drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov and to michael.maynard@mass.gov. That will at least get the individuals or the communities in the loop, and then DPL and the board will review them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Michael. So with that, the other thing I mentioned in my remarks was, that we've heard about, our systems having a hard time getting chemicals, and I didn't want to lose sight of that. I believe, Jen, you might have been collecting additional questions while we were speaking. I don't know if this is a good time to share. I think all these people that are unmuted would be able to, help me answer to the best of our ability. And again, if we can't answer today, we will answer shortly, and we will make sure that we're putting it up on our website, and we'll make sure that we're communicating it to MWWA so you can push that information out.
Yeah, so we, if others have questions that haven't been addressed, and I will say that I did send 10 pages of questions to DEP at noon today, so they're obviously maybe not prepared to address all of the questions that have come in, but they are in now receipt of 10 pages of them, so I'm sure they'll be working through them. But if anyone has immediate questions that weren't addressed, you can email me at jpederson, that's P-E-D-E-R-S-O-N, at masswaterworks.org, and I can try to pose those questions. As I was looking through our list, Commissioner, I'm not sure, we understand the staffing licensing. So if I understand correctly, if water systems need to reduce staffing in some way or alternate their staffing plan, they should get in touch with the regional office, and the regional office would be able to approve such a request?
That's correct. That's correct. For example, one of the things we heard, one example is that, can we potentially do more with if we're, a SCADA system and we're losing our people? Yes. Anytime there's a situation going on. And again, I really want to emphasize, we recognize this is an unprecedented situation and everybody's doing the best they can to keep this function going. And so we're going to have to be flexible with you. But, the best way to keep that discussion going and making sure that we're achieving both goals of keeping your workforce healthy, while we're still also making sure that the water that's, going out to the public is the highest quality we need it to be, is to engage with those regional offices. And again, we will work with you. We will work with you quickly.
The other question that came up in terms of sort of DEP's business as usual, could you just address whether or not the regional offices will remain open, how they're going to be staffed, and what's the best way to contact DEP in case of emergency or compliance?
Right, it's a really good question, and I alluded to it briefly. Most of us are likely to be teleworking. We'll be working from remote locations, but we will be working. We will be working, and so, like I said, at the end of this call, I'm going to have you identify, I'm going to identify key points of contact right away to get things going. But over time, most of the people, most if not all of the people that a water system is interacting with on a regular basis, you would be interacting with for the immediate next couple of days, we just want to make sure we're being as timely as possible. So that's why we're highlighting these points of contact today. But we're going to be working remotely. But we're going to be, we can do a lot of things on computer. We can do a lot of things on phones. We're making sure that we have access to relevant files. If we're going to need to go out and look at facilities, we're going to be prepared to do that as well. So, you know, it's going to be different. You know, we're under the same sort of instructions that a lot of people are, that the best thing we can do to avoid, you know, spreading this illness is to not be in close quarters with each other. So that's why we're going to be in this teleworking regime for the next couple of weeks, but we will be working. And so I would encourage people to be in contact. I've been talking with our staff, you know, really continuously since the weekend to make sure that people know that, you know, we're going to be in business, and people should expect, you know, if they contact us, to hear us, you know, hear back from us. You know, obviously we're trying to avoid face-to-face meetings to the greatest extent possible, but the rest of the work we can do, phones, work we can do on the phone, work we can do on computers, we're going to keep doing. So that's why I would encourage people to be in contact.
And in terms of laboratory services and lab capacity, the labs have sort of indicated that it's business as usual for them. I did hear from one that suggested that they too are trying to minimize face-to-face interaction with, you know, the outside public. So
this is Damon. I can jump in that one. We have gotten the status for about four major labs that serve our community so far, and they're all saying that they're open for business, but they may be executing additional procedures so that you don't face-to-face contact. So our message is that you should call your laboratory, ask them what their procedures are, and then call them whenever you plan to drop off samples in case that changes. You know, obviously, you know, we use a privatized lab community for a lot of our sampling in the state. If they should lose staff and have to close, you need to know that on a regular basis.
I just had a question come in via email about recommendations on staffing in terms of splitting up crews and licensed operators. And I know from some of what I've received over the past several days, there are many municipalities doing that and trying to segregate their workforce in some ways. Does DEP have any guidance on that?
You know, again, I first of all, I want to really commend the systems that are trying to think ahead like this, you know, to preserve their workforces. I believe, you know, it's prudent to be thinking about these things and planning like this right now. Damon, I don't know if you have any particular guidance other than, you know, if it seems to be, you know, that you're worried that you're varying from your standard plan and you want some, you know, you want to engage with us to reach out to us and let us know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. Just, you know, if you think you're below what we've expected for staffing, just talk to your regional office.
But again, you know, we're going to be very mindful of the fact that people are trying to, you know, make sure that they have somebody that can keep the lights on and the systems running. And we want to make sure that we're working with you in support of that. Jen, could I ask, while we've been talking, has anybody else raised the issue of chemicals? I know we got one inquiry about sodium hydroxide. Is there anything else that you know, either come in during this call or maybe right before this call that we're hearing about? Because again, we'd like to make sure we're staying in touch with our partners, you know, maybe people that we don't typically work with, but we're now working with in the emergency context.
So I do have one right here that's just come in. If the normal chemical supplier is unable to deliver the requested chemicals in the required time frame, will the state have an emergency chemical supplier available?
That's why it's so important for us to know. I mean, typically, you know, DEP doesn't, you know, isn't in the business of, you know, figuring out, you know, who's providing what. But in this case, because it is important, and again, you know, particularly if it looks like, you know, suppliers are having a problem with it, we would engage, you know, we would reach out to people that in the emergency management side of the administration to see if they can locate sources. So, I guess that's why it's so important for us to be able to stay in touch on this issue and do it in real time, so we have time to work with both the EPA at the federal level and our emergency supply people to make sure that we're minimizing the disruptions.
So another question, you know, obviously we're focused right now on drinking water. One person wants to know if there'll be a similar call to discuss wastewater operations.
Yes, we started with drinking water because, you know, you've been terrific about raising these issues and getting us to think about it. But we would like to have a similar discussion with wastewater operators and are looking to set one up in the near future. And in the meantime, you know, if people have questions, they should definitely be reaching out to the regional offices. The people that we're identifying at on this call are also people that will be able to put you in contact with the right people on the wastewater side. And actually, why don't I do that right now? Why don't I ask each of the regional people if you could unmute yourself on *6 and identify yourself, your name, your phone number, and your email contact. And if we'll put all of this up, you know, we'll make all of this available electronically. But again, if people are thinking about things right now, I'd like them to know who our immediate points of contact are. So maybe I'll ask Western Region first to unmute yourself and identify who you are and your point of contact. And you unmute yourself by pressing *6. Okay. I thought it was going to be Brian Harrington and Dee Dee Cabral. I will we'll give them a little bit of time. Let's go to the Central Region. Marielle, are you able to unmute yourself and speak to the group?
Hello. Hi, it's Marielle.
Oh, hold on, Marielle. Dee Dee, are you on the line now?
Yeah. Brian identified himself as the contact. Do you need me to give you his contact information? Spell it out for folks?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Okay. His email is brian.z.harrington, HARRINGTON, @mass.gov. Office phone number is 413-755-2291. That's his direct line. And his cell phone is 213-265-8014
for his cell phone. Thank you.
Am I off of mute now?
Brian, I think you are off of mute now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that, again, I'll check the office voicemail and email frequently and call back as quickly as I can, but my cell is there as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Central Region.
Hi, this is Marielle. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, so it's Marielle Stone with the Central Region. My email address is marielle.stone@mass.gov, so that's marielle.stone, S-C-O-N-E, again, @mass.gov. My direct line at work is 508-767-2827, and my cell phone number is 508-713-3528.
Thank you. Northeast Region.
Hey, this is Amy LaChance. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. So my email address is amy.lachance, amy.lachance, @mass.gov. And my work cell phone number is area code 617-429-1428. And that's probably the best way to reach me. My office number is 978-694-3260.
This is Rachel. Can you hear me? This is Rachel Freed. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'm the Deputy Regional Director in Northeast. You can email me at rachel.freed@mass.gov. That's Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L dot F-R-E-E-D at mass.gov. My cell phone number is 978-604-1985. And my work number is 978-694-3258.
Okay, and our Southeast office.
Hi, this is Dave Johnston from the Southeast office. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, so I'm the Deputy Regional Director of the Southeast office, and you can reach me at David.Johnston with a T. So David.Johnston, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N. At mass.gov. I'm going to give you my cell phone first, which is the best phone number to try to reach me at, and that you can call anytime, 508-277-1885. I'm going to also provide my work phone number, which is 508-946-2708. And our section chief, unfortunately, is not able to connect to the his emails right now, so I'm going to give you his backup. And his section chief is Richard Rondo, but he can't touch his emails. So you can call him at 508-946. 2816, and his backup is James.M.McLaughlin, M-C-L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N at mass.gov. His office phone is 508-946-2805.
Okay, thank you. So those are our contacts. We are going to put them up on our website just to make sure that everybody has them. But again, if you have an immediate thing that you want to talk about this afternoon, we wanted to make sure that those people identified themselves. Jen, any other questions that have been coming in while we've been talking?
Yes. So call form sampling. I know you addressed this a little bit, but there's a specific question about sampling out of a fire hydrant in close proximity to the state assigned locations. Is that acceptable? Because we're being asked not to go into any buildings.
Outside locations, I know people are always nervous about that because of the possibility of, the edge of it is contaminated, you may get a false positive for the system. On the other hand, again, I know that, where we're, confronting these kinds of unusual situations, I would think we need to talk about that. Damon, is there something you'd like to add to that? Have you gotten these questions?
Well, that's basically the same thing we'd say. We've gotten the question about can we use, hose bibs and outside spigots, and obviously I put fire hydrants in the same category. Your real risk here is that you've got an outdoor sampling tap and likely to get a contamination if you don't adequately disinfect it. So, it's kind of a last resort we would recommend, because the last thing you want under this conditions is to have a boil order issued because of an unsanitary sample collection.
So it really puts the pressure on. We'll work with you, but there is some risk to this, but we'll work with you. But it really underscores the need that if you're going to look at a site like this, because you're really shut out of all the other alternatives, that you know, making sure that you're really decontaminating the sampling area is important.
Okay, next question. Is there any guidance or recommendations regarding repair work other than emergency work within the distribution system?
No, we're just starting to get that question. We've been participating in calls with other state agencies, and you know we're mindful of the fact that at least in Boston, certain construction projects have been suspended. So that's one that I don't know that we have any guidance. But again, as part of our ongoing work with the public health and other entities, if we could, we'd like to take that back. You know, you're rightly drawing the distinction between the emergency work that has to happen to keep the water flowing and other things that are a little more discretionary.
Back to the issue of chemicals, at least one water supplier's chemical supplier had indicated that some water systems are ordering way more chemicals than they would normally, and the supplier was concerned about it. I don't know that it's a question, but more a comment that water systems should be planning chemical usage and not hoarding. So I guess that's just a cautionary tale for others on the call. Similar to what I guess people have been saying about bread and milk and soup in the grocery stores, you know, make sure that it's available for others.
Right. No, we'd echo those comments. And, you know, again, we're trying to make sure that everybody has what they need throughout this very unsettled period. And so, yeah, it's, you know, we haven't heard yet that, you know, there's going to be a shortage of anything. So, you know, take what you need. And, you know, again, we'll keep an eye on that, though, because we want everybody to have the supplies that they need. And if there are problems, we want to help address them.
Again, back to the issue of sampling, and especially for small water systems who have closed their facilities like restaurants, what is the procedure if they can't gain access to the buildings for sampling?
You know, again, I might ask Damon to help me out, but, you know, first of all, if there are nearby alternative locations, when we talked to EPA about this, they said, can you up the number of, the pool of locations you can look at, you know, can you look at upstream, downstream? If not, then I think that's the area where I think we and you are going to want to think, be thoughtful about what we can do to make up that site, because it is entirely possible. You know, a building is going to be closed. You're not going to be able to have access to it. You're not going to be able to get somebody to come in and open it up just for the water sampling. So we are going to need to think about alternatives. Damon, anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, the only variance I would add is I think I saw among all the comments that in some cases these are coming from contract operators where the building itself is a public water system, like an NTNC or something like a TNC. If they've closed, they have no sampling requirements.
That's a really good point. So if they're closed, they don't have to do the sampling.
Damon, this is Brian Harrington. Would we want them to sample before they reopen?
Yeah, that's basically our practice. If they've essentially become like a seasonal system, so we'd want them to do a little flushing and sampling before they reopen.
Thank you.
Okay. Another question sort of about how the state might be able to assist with employee personal protective equipment. Is there a possibility of getting a state supply of Clorox wipes and hand sanitizers for employees who are working out in the distribution system?
I know this is a real challenge for everybody. We are, you know, as part of our engagement with the public health authorities about what the best practices are, we'll raise that as an issue. So far, I don't have an immediate answer. And again, I'd like to make sure that we're giving you the most up to date from, you know, what the public health authorities are telling us to do. So it's not only good practices, but we'll also raise the hand sanitizer issue. You know, as you pointed out, those are hard to find commodities right now, but we'll ask.
Question specific to fluoride. So for a system that purchased treated water but adds fluoride in-house, who would we call if something happens to our operators and we're unable to add the fluoride daily? we could just shut down our system. Would it be DEP or DPH who would make the call about shutting down fluoride?
Damon, I might ask you to take a first crack at that.
So I know that DPH is in charge of the community fluoridation program, but I guess I'm, you know, if this is a community PWS, I would suggest they would need to reach out to that program at DPH. Our answer on DEP's side is that obviously we don't view fluoridation as necessary to provide clean drinking water. And so if you can't get the chemicals, we're not concerned, but you might have a notification requirement at DPH.
Okay, I believe this was addressed earlier, but I want to just reinforce it because some people did have some difficulty getting in on the call. But as DEP looks at lead and copper sampling, so some systems are required to collect 60 samples twice a year. It's hard to get the residents to collect samples during normal times. And this, you know, is providing a lot of angst about people transferring bottles back and forth and getting the samples. So could you just reiterate again your position on lead and copper sampling?
Yeah, I think what, and Damon, you know, correct me if I misstate any of this, but I think our guidance is if you want to, you know, postpone, you know, the current round, you know, because you're encountering that difficulty, you know, we can talk to you about that. Is that right, Damon?
Yeah, so our answer is a little more nuanced. The current round, if you're required to sample semi-annually, which is January to June, has many more months left in it. So what we're saying is that, you know, don't scramble to try to collect samples in March, but we do realize that a lot of systems start early to try to get, you know, homeowners who aren't so on the ball to get the stuff done. What we're also saying, though, is that you should probably reach out to all your volunteer homeowners now and identify any that won't let you in. You know, this is obviously something that if you start now early, you can probably, you know, help us work with you to identify alternate sites. You know, under the LCR, it has to be these high-risk sites, so it's not just the neighbors necessarily. So, you know, the sooner you can identify homeowners that you know are not going to participate, the better.
And if you have if you have a window of time, you know, using that time, you know, to recognize that in a couple of months from now, hopefully things will be more certain. But
yeah, thankfully, the vast majority of our public water systems are on either annual or triennial monitoring, and for most of them, that monitoring period is June to September, so they're not currently in a monitoring round.
The commissioner did state, and I will say because I'm getting several emails, but you will be sending out all of those contacts for the regional folks, including cell phone numbers that were given on the call so that they're accessible for everyone?
Yes. Yes, we will. And I'm going to ask everybody, you know, that gave their information to send me an email right now so I can compile it and send it right after this call.
Hey, Jen and Marty, this is Dave Johnson. May I just stress that folks shouldn't forget that we still have our 24-hour emergency call line, and that phone number is 888-304-1133.
Right. Really good point. You know, as many of you know, if you've had after-hours events, you've been able to use our emergency response line as another point of contact. But I think it is also helpful to have these. So we're gonna give you all that information. And Jen, I will send that to you as an email. And if you want to push it out to all your memberships while we figure out where it lands on our website, we will, that would be great.
Yep, we can do that. So several weeks ago, the Massachusetts Warn Leadership Committee got together and was talking about, you know, sort of reinvigorating Warn. And so Kirsten King, who's the Secretary of Warn for Massachusetts, has been pushing out information about the ability to join the Warn if you're not already. But there is also a statewide Public Works Mutual Aid Committee. And Commissioner, I don't know if there's been any interagency discussions about convening that group.
Yeah,
we
can take a look at that, and we'll be, you know, again, we're all trying to use all the tools possible, and that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're hearing from one segment of Public Works here, but there may be other broader Public Works questions and needs.
Right, and yes, as you noted, you know, wastewater is one, you know, and we're trying to look at all the tools we have because, you know, we interact with, you know, a lot of different experts in a lot of different fields, so it's a good suggestion.
Another one maybe for Damon. So if a system is required to do 25 coliform samples per month, if they're not able to get in on some sites, can they cut out a few sites and double up on other sites and still meet the 25 that they're covered? This particular sample, community samples every other week.
Yeah, that's EPA's. We've discussed that. We are okay with that as a last scenario kind of thing. It's obviously the goal is to get the right number of samples, and so you could go back to the same site if you really can't identify any other sites. But, you know, we're looking to make sure that the entire distribution system is represented, so hopefully you're not just clustering all these around one location in town.
All right, a couple more. For public water systems that require daily or weekly visits, will there be any leeway with limiting site visits or decreasing the number of visits required due to staffing issues or exposure to the public risks? And again, that's a sort of a small system question for those that, you know, aren't large community systems.
Yeah, and again, I'd encourage those people that are, you know, looking at that to reach out to the regional offices and see, you know, again, we want to be thoughtful. We want to make sure that we're providing, you know, the relief that you need while still making sure that, you know, the minimums are being met. So we're aware of the request, and what we'd encourage people to do is you know, reach out and have that discussion. Because, again, we're going to be working. And you know, we would like to engage with systems on that who feel like they need that help.
Just one more reminder. Kirsten reminds me that WARN covers both water and wastewater, and the website's been fully updated with all the info, as there has been a lot more members joining recently. So for any water systems on the line, you can go to that mawarn.org website. Get information on WARN.
Terrific.
And with that, I think that's all the calls that I've had. I mean, that's all the email questions, at least.
Great. You know, again, I, you know, Jen, I defer to you and your members a little bit here, but you know, my intention is to have this be a weekly call. You know, we think it's important enough. You know, hopefully each week we'll have something that will be useful to push out, and also hopefully we will be able to, if there are issues that you need to get on our radar screen, we will be able to do that as well. This isn't the only way of communicating, but it is an important way, you know, and you know, this is very unusual times, and while we're in them, we'd like to err on the side of too much communication.
And I will say for Mass Water Works, you know, anyone who's on the call today who would like to send me any questions, comments, concerns, Kathy Baskin, who's the Assistant Commissioner for Water, and I are talking almost daily. So that is an avenue to get questions and concerns to DEP as well. So feel free to email me, and I can push those along as well.
Right. And one other thing, you know, I mean, if the things you're raising with the regional offices, we're going to internally at DEP, we're going to be talking about this daily, you know, recognizing how important your work is. So if these inquiries come in and people feel like it's either a bigger issue or they need to make sure that, you know, they have, you know, the help they need to be able to answer it timely for a public water system, we're really endeavoring to turn these around really quickly and make sure we're giving consistent answers across the state.
All right, so with that, I guess we've gone through the questions, and we can expect that DEP will be sending out FAQs with the answers to some of those that needed a little bit more time to address.
Right. We posted a few you know, preliminary Q's and A's and some resources today on the COVID-19 website. And as I indicated, this is a work in progress, and it's going to be updated regularly. So we're going to take what we heard here today and work quickly to update those questions and answers and post that on the web as well. And we will use our drinking water mailing list as well as our regular communications with the MWWA to stay in touch with you on that.
All right, so, I can unmute all if there are any last questions, but we know that we'll just go crazy bad. So if you do have a question that hasn't been addressed, maybe now's the point where you could just hit *6 and unmute yourself.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's *6, it should work. It worked for me, so.
And I just want to say thank you to everyone for their patience on this. This is a brand new product that we're using, and so it took a little bit to try and figure it all out, and hopefully next time it'll be a little bit smoother, but thank you all for your patience.
One more chance to hit *6 and ask a question. Okay, not hearing any. Then what we'll do is thank everybody for your time, and we'll follow up on these items and keep the discussion going.
And thank you, Commissioner, to you and staff for making yourself available for this.
Absolutely, and thank you again for all the work that you and your systems do across the state.